could behavioral biases be affecting how you make decisions about your money? We're going to talk about that coming up on the show today.
From the streets of San Antonio, straight to your wallet, it's Jake's Two Cents on Jake of All Trades.
All right, welcome back. My name is Kirk, and I'm not a financial expert.
But I'm Jake Rivas. I am the financial expert. And together, Kirk and I talk about financial planning topics, we look at the economy, and we talk about financial articles, all with the express purpose of helping our listeners build wealth today and into the future.
And we're going to be talking about partialities and viewpoints and your biases that are not particularly helping you. Now, this is something we learned, you know, very early on in school. I think this is one of those lessons that school really seems to try to hammer home these days. The idea that you have a bias, and the way I heard it is that you have biases in general, and that makes it hard for you to, you know, that everything you say and do comes from a bias, right?
Right.
Comes from your viewpoint. And we may even be at the kind of pinnacle of that in our culture. But there's a lot of lessons so you might disagree or agree with some of that, but there's a lot you can learn that there may be behavioral biases that is a real thing, that you are inclined to spend. So like, for instance, when I worked at Cutco when I was really young, I sold knives, and we talked about this on the show. I worked for Vector and I became a district manager like when I was 20, 21. And so I had my own office. I had a secretary or receptionist, an administrative assistant, I guess that we called them. I hired and recruited college kids, and I would try to, motivate them to go sell and try to get some of them to stick around and become managers or assistant managers. And one of the things that I fell into is that this kind of big dog feel bias, right? So I got into this habit as a 21-year-old recruiting 18, 19, 20-year-olds, right? So my own age, basically. And when we would go to lunch, for instance, I would way more often than I should pick up the bill to kind of look like the big dog.
Ah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's a kind of behavioral bias I had.
Absolutely.
That was like that. Or, you know, I could go on with other things where it's like with some people, I'll do that with other people I'm may not, with some genders, maybe I would do that when I shouldn't. Right. And it's like, and there's a kind of bias that goes in there. It's like, this is not a good thing. And you need to be aware of this and these biases. And that's not exactly what this is talking about, but it's kind of, I think, in the same realm.
Yeah. I mean, it could apply.
One of them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So the article today it's posted on CNBC. We'll share a link to it, but the title of it is "Some of Your Behavioral Biases Could Be Causing You More Financial Harm Than You Realize." And they did an actual study of about 1200 participants to determine whether or not this was true. So, they go through the four most common biases that most people, and they say they reference most Americans because they are obviously extrapolating the results of this survey, but at least they say that most Americans suffer from one or more of these four basic biases in one form or another, and that it has direct correlation to financial outcomes. And it really kind of does. You kind of alluded to it right there when you were talking about your big dog persona, right? That could easily be the first bias they talk about, which is called the present bias, which means it's your tendency to overvalue immediate smaller rewards at the expense of long-term goals.
Yeah.
Right. So
you
want to look good. You want to look like top dog. You want to present an image. In reality, though, your electric bill is going to get shut off next week, right? Like,
well, and even less than that was just that it was, I mean, that's part of it. Didn't have as much to invest in marketing stuff that I could have, which would have grown the business and made me given me a bigger, way bigger reward in terms of I could have hit a sales goal or something and gotten some big bonus.
Yeah.
So I had this tendency to overvalue immediate smaller rewards that I maybe didn't even think about even. Like, that's the important thing about biases, is not that they exist and can control you sometimes, but that they exist and you understand them, right?
Bingo.
I think that's the important thing.
Yeah, I think that's a really crucial point, because biases are going to exist. We're human beings, and we experienced things throughout adolescence and, you know, teenage years and into an early adulthood. All of those experiences in and of themselves naturally develop a bias. And so the objective here is to just recognize when we're falling victim to one of these biases, to make sure that we're making the right decision and it's not just sort of our natural tendency coming out and we're just going with it.
Yeah. So in the article, they, like you said, they give four different common biases in this realm that they focused on. And I thought it was really interesting. So the first one you talked about was present bias, the tendency to overvalue immediate smaller rewards. And that's what I was doing. But I think I don't remember if it says this in here. I bet that's one of the more popular ones. That's gotta be.
I would think so, because that's sort of and that's kind of the culture too, right? That's our, that's our
now culture.
YOLO. Yeah. That is the culture we have created, is, you know, we'll spend and live for today. We'll worry about later. And to some extent, and I've talked about this on the show before, right? There's value in life during life, right? In the interim, we can't only exclusively be focused on long-term goals. But the problem with having such an extreme present bias is that we are completely blind to those long-term situations, not even goals, but like long-term life is going to happen. So we must plan and acknowledge for its existence, unless we're just planning on dying, right? So that's, I think, where
some young people do have it in there. Like emotionally, they don't think it consciously, but they don't have a sense of the future. I think that's something that takes a little bit of time to develop. And, you know, when I talk to like 25-year-olds, you know, like, so when I think 10 years back, I was 25, 10 years ago. When they think 10 years back, they were 15. And, you know, so, and they were only conscious for like 10 years before that. And even then, barely. Right. Like it's still developing. And so I think there is like a sense of not being able to see how things stretch out in time. You know, like jobs are really exciting the first couple months or a year. But when you do a job for 5-10 years, then you're like, yeah, this thing I thought I really loved, I don't actually love it as much as I thought I did. Right. And that's something that a young kid can't do. They can't see that as well. And so I think that's a, you know, important aspect of it.
Definitely.
Present bias.
So just being aware of that too. And especially if you're, you know, for younger millennials or younger people, if you're aware of this kind of stuff at an earlier age, it gives you an advantage, because you might still operate in a lifestyle where you emphasize the present, but at least you're acknowledging the existence of a future. Right. And by just acknowledging it, it might help you make just slightly better decisions around your money than maybe your counterparts who are exclusively YOLO.
Yeah. But also, by the way, I have to say the opposite is true, where I have met young people who, for whatever reason, are the opposite of YOLO. Right. And they're and even though they're young, and it's like, but this is the time when you can be a little bit YOLO. Like this is the time when it's way better and easier when you're in your 20s. So don't be like an 80-year-old man when you're 22 years old, or an 80-year-old woman. Like you are 22, experience that. So what you were talking about earlier about, you know, live life in the moment too, or like life isn't, you know, even financial planning isn't meant for life after you're almost done with it. It's also in the meantime is important as well. And I think, so it's a balance. And this is why, even when you're young, you know, it's helpful to get good people around you, people older that will just talk to you and give you advice, because, you know, you have to make both. It's not easy. It's, you can overvalue something small and you can undervalue something small. You know, like your 20s is the time to take every trip that you could possibly take, right? It's something I did not do. I wish I did. And even if you're not making, or, you know, every trip that makes some kind of sense, right? And just because, like, even if you end up, and this is my own view, even if you end up like 28 with only a couple $1,000 investment, you're 28. Like that's the mm-hmm. advantage of being 28. Now, if you're 38 or 40, that's a different discussion, right? Sure. Now you're in a different ball game. My point is that, you know, just don't go both, like, just think like both
ways.
Two
extremes. Yeah.
So totally don't, two extremes. Don't be completely YOLO, but don't be completely the opposite. And I've known people like that. I remember talking to this young girl years ago, and she was like freaking out at 22 that she only had, I think she was 21, something like that. She just graduated college, maybe 22. And she graduated from like a really good college. And she like was freaking out that she only had something like $27,000 saved up at this point.
Wow.
And I was like, you know, I'm 30 or 29. I don't have that. Like, what are you talking about? I mean, not that I'm a model, but come on, that's a good amount of money. You know, you have good rent for a while if you really needed it. Like,
right.
You know, so that, yeah, that was
especially
just
at that age. Yeah, so she was more of a future bias. I don't think that's actually a formal bias, but
yeah,
same logic, different.
Well, she undervalued the immediate smaller rewards. Maybe,
right.
That's what I'll say.
Yeah. So and overvalued the long-term goals, which is,
and that brought her anxiety.
Too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cause she thought she didn't have enough at that much. I was like, well, how much is enough? Anyway. Next one.
So the next one is called base rate neglect or base rate fallacy. You might have heard it called that before. And this is the tendency to ignore the probability of something happening and instead judge its likelihood by new, readily available information. So the best example I can think of with this would be like people who play the lottery all the time. The base rate information that we have, that is known, that statistical data about the lottery is that there's a 40 million chance that you'll win, right? So there's a very, very, very small chance you'll actually win. And that's our base rate information. When you're experiencing the base rate neglect, you play the lottery and you spend $50 a month on lottery tickets because you watch people on the news win every night. And we're associating that immediate win with playing the lottery, when in reality, our data tells us that the likelihood of you winning is so negligible that actually taking that $50 a month that you've been contributing to the lottery would have served you much better had you been putting it into an investment account for yourself. Hmm. But the fact that you discount the probability of winning the lottery just exclusively because you're seeing people win it and it's on the news and it's exciting, that's where that base rate neglect comes in.
And that one's weird. I don't understand that one. I mean, I get that, like, I guess with the lotto, but how does that apply to other things you do? I guess tendency to ignore the probability of something happening and instead judge its likelihood by new. So tendency to ignore the probability of something happening. So you said the lotto. So tendency to ignore the probability of not winning the lotto.
Right.
And instead judging it by you heard a story about people winning and thought, well, you gotta be in it to win it. And so you spent.
Yeah. I think the other thing that helps with me, with my understanding of this is the phrase, it's different this time.
Okay. Yeah.
So like, I think about, let's apply this to investments for a second. Let's look at March of 2020, the pandemic, we're officially in a pandemic and the financial markets collapse, right? Yeah. Well, in reality, we have historical data that shows the financial markets have performed and collapsed and recovered at this magnitude many times before. But the tendency for some investors at that time were to ignore that information because all they were experiencing and all they were seeing was, it's different this time. We've never experienced this before. We won't ever recover. Therefore, I'm going to make a rash decision and I'm going to sell my investments. Oof. That's an example as well of that base rate neglect. We failed to acknowledge, while history won't repeat itself necessarily, it always serves as a guide. And so I think this is saying that by overlooking that, we are making decisions without that wealth of information that we have access to.
Yeah, that's very similar to the, now it reminds me of the Bitcoin people a little bit. and the Redditors, the AMC, and that whole fiasco where they were, and there were some people who, of course, made a lot of money, but they were ignoring the likelihood, which was that this thing that's not clearly not worth this, GameStop is not worth more than, you know, $8 a share or something like that.
Right.
In reality, like, just it's not based on everything it does. And yet they were ignoring that because they all got together and they saw the stock go up, not these other, you know, all the other relevant factors. They were ignoring.
Is the company profitable?
Do they have good management?
Do they have good management?
Do they have a good plan for the future? Do they have the right investments? Are they, you know, are they in an industry that's growing? Are they back? Yeah, there's a whole bunch of those things. And they were neglecting all that. They just saw the ticker price go up because everybody was investing in it to scam the market. And that's what that's all they saw. That's base rate neglect. They had this readily available information.
Yep. And they just, and they tend to associate that with decision-making rather than acknowledging what else is out there.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that, I get that better.
Yeah. And I think that too will become and has become a bigger issue, especially with like everyone using social media and having access to a lot of other people's opinions. That can also translate into, this is the right approach, regardless of what's happened before, regardless of what I know.
Yeah, I mean, I think this probably applied to politics, would apply to pretty much everything in politics.
Yeah, yeah.
Just everything that there's every new movement, every new thing, and people are like not thinking about the probability of something happening, of a particular event or the consequences, and they're just excited.
It's actually happened in a different way before, and this was the outcome.
And so they're ignoring a lot of that. That makes sense. Yeah, that's a good one to think through. That's a difficult one. Present bias is simple. Base rate neglect is one that is worthy of contemplation
more,
because it probably is, you probably will fall for it more than you think, especially like you said with social media. I see that all the time with just people getting excited about something and they're only focusing on one new piece of information that's like, oh, see, look at this, right? And they're not looking at all the relevant data.
Yeah.
And they're ignoring what's probably going to happen based on that.
Bingo. Okay. So the next one, I don't know if you know anybody who's ever suffered from this, but, I do.
Definitely have.
This one is just overconfidence, tendency to overweigh one's own abilities or information. And they talk about when making an investment decision, but this can obviously apply when making a lot of other decisions. And I think the point is when you're uninformed, at the level that you should be, and then you are trying to make a decision. That's overconfidence. It's because overconfidence to me is not a bad thing, but it becomes a bad thing when it inhibits your ability to make a good decision, right? You can be overconfident in your abilities as a surgeon, but that's because you're a trained surgeon, and therefore you get to be overconfident because you are exceptional. You can't be overconfident in being a chef when all you make is ramen noodles in the microwave because you don't know, right?
That doesn't make you a chef. Well, Socrates had a line, the wise man knows that he knows not. And the idea is just that, and I do think there's something to that, the idea that the more you know on a subject, and this is why it's important. This is why, to me, I always tell people, you really have to dig deep into subjects. You know, I like to read. So like really read on a certain economic issue. I've read a lot about antitrust. And the more you read about it, the more you learn that there's so much out there you don't know. And that gives you a respect that this is true of other fields. I read a lot of literature and poetry. And the more I read, the more I try to understand it aesthetically and what it does and it's what it is as a, you know, its role in our lives and all, the more I just realize, like, there's a lot I don't understand still. And same thing with investing. I think smart investors, Warren Buffett, these guys, they understand that there is that little silent, invisible thing over here that I overlook. That's the thing that's going to take me down. And overconfidence is the manner in which is the kind of, you know, big fat gorilla that doesn't look around for anything and just eats everything it wants. And it doesn't make its own. And it doesn't like look around to be cautious because it thinks it's this big fat gorilla that nothing can mess with. Right. And that's kind of the problem with overconfidence. That's right. Confidence is good, but overconfidence is not, because it's the tendency to overweigh one's own abilities, right? And, and we see this with people all the time, you know, like you alluded to. We see this with coworkers or people we've worked with, or, you know, managers maybe, where they think that they're always right. And especially because they're a manager, like, I'm sure that this has happened to people. It's like, I'm the person in charge, so I definitely already know the answer. And it's like this new person has this new way of doing it, and it's way better, but they can't see that. So this applies to so much in this realm. What we're talking about is obviously with investing. Is I heard something, or I read a couple articles or saw some YouTube videos that this new investment chime is you know, going to definitely overtake everything in the industry. So put most of my portfolio into this thing or something like that, right?
Right.
Yeah. And that's bad, because you need to, you know, Warren Buffett, we've talked about this over and over again, he has a checklist to make sure he checks his ego, his confidence, to make sure he's not making mistakes. And then once he has everything fits into that and he thinks about it, then he makes a decision and he gets as much information as possible.
Yep. Yeah. And this will be much like base rate neglect. This becomes perpetually a bigger issue with the engagement in social media and the abundant amount of information that's out there. So you have to be super cautious, because I think even our own tendencies, if we're arguing with somebody on a social media platform, we may feel right and they feel right. And you may have people on your side that are,
oh, that makes it worse.
Yeah. And so we have to be really careful about that and how it permeates all decision-making in your life, not just investments in particular.
Yep. Yeah. That's a big one. And I try, and like on social media, which I don't even engage with people I disagree with much anymore. Mm-hmm. But when I do, I try to like really overdo it in the humble direction. And they're like, are you sure? I'm not sure. What do you think of this? Just because it's so easy to fall into the overconfident trap.
Right. Yep. Definitely. The last one is not really a surprise, but it's loss aversion. The tendency to be excessively fearful of experiencing losses relative to gains. And this applies a lot in investments. You feel a loss on your investments twice as much as you do a gain. And that's just, I think, our natural tendency. Loss is associated with, you know, death or the elimination of something that's disappeared. And so this can be particularly painful, which the problem is that it's not just being fearful of loss, it's how that forces you to make a decision, right? So being loss averse may force you to sell an investment when really you shouldn't have. You were just worried about it losing even more money, when in reality, this wasn't money that you needed for another 30 years. So that loss aversion tendency forced me to get out of something really when I didn't need to.
Yeah. And this one is a powerful one too. It's why a lot of people stagnate in life in general, right? Is that they're more fearful to lose something. So they want to just keep it as much as possible. But the problem is, because life is always in flux, including this is relevant to investments. Investments change, monetary policies change, and people want to just, you know, keep everything they have. And even though if they changed and learned and understood with the world, they would, you know, gain a lot, and yet they're fearful of all these losses, of potential losses. You may lose things.
Sure.
And I think that's an even worse, so if you think about it in the investment world, and we can make an analogy, I think, into the real world, but in the investment world, if I'm fearful of experiencing a loss, like I'm fearful of experiencing, you know, losing a chunk of my 401k or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so my rather than being experiencing a gain and trying to reinvest in new realms that are opening up. Mm-hmm. So I don't, you know, the result is inaction. And I think that's what fear usually does, is it leads to inaction. But the problem is that you might lose something anyway. Like if you don't take action,
you're definitely losing something.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good way. You're definitely lose something.
Yeah.
And it's a debilitating issue, loss aversion, and being aware of it is really important. And that's now how to get out of it. You know, that's difficult because you may want to not make decisions because you're like, well, I don't want to change anything because things might go wrong if I do. But, the problem is if you do that, you could definitely lead down the trap of you will lose it anyway. And this is true like with relationships, like I want things to stay the way they are, but people aren't the same 10 years later. So you have to change or you're going to lose your spouse or your girlfriend or boyfriend. Right. Like I think I see that all the time with just friendships and relationships and things like that. Even a good relationship with your kid, like your kid's going to change as your kid gets older. And if you're fearful of embracing these new things that they're interested in, you're going to lose out on that.
Right. You could in essence be perpetuating that loss aversion by not acting, right? When you think that you're actually doing the right thing by avoiding the loss, but in reality, you're perpetuating it because you're not doing anything.
Yes. That's the point I was trying to make. You said it very clearly. Thank you.
Yeah.
Is that loss aversion is an emotion you feel. And that emotion is, it's a bias, right? A behavioral bias. So I'm not going to act because I'm afraid of losing this thing. But in reality, by not acting on it and by not making changes, you will very likely, you're more likely to lose that thing.
Something. Mm-hmm. Like, it may not be exactly what you were afraid of losing, but it could be something that you've lost that's worse than what you initially thought were worried about losing.
Yep.
So what do we do with this? Because we can't necessarily eliminate biases. They're ingrained in us, depending on how the severity of it is, right? What can we do with this? I think at least for the first thing is just general awareness, right? Just acknowledging and understanding these four primary biases can go a long way. Just
know thyself.
Know thyself and know thy trigger points, right? The other thing, and especially when it applies to really financial planning, is setting like decision-making speed bumps, as they refer to in this article. Mm. And that's where I set up a triggering mechanism. For example, I am loss averse. I realize my loss aversion bias is tickling. The markets are crashing. I want to sell my stock. Well, maybe that speed bump is I set a 3-day time limit. So I have to wait 3 days before I will sell my stock and just see if your emotions change over those 3 days, right? That's one way that you could institute a speed bump of sorts in order to not make an irrational decision. It could be at the end of the day, you still follow that loss aversion bias, but at least you set up sort of a checkpoint before you got there. So then there's not a regret issue.
Yep. Excuse me. Yes.
So I think it's all, it's just super important to acknowledge what our tendencies are and not to discount them when we're making decisions really about anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a useful to go the other way. It's why you have to know yourself. So you have to know which way you lean. You know, are you overconfident? And some people could be underconfident and they need to go the other way, but you need to know yourself. Are you tending to be biased toward present bias? Well, then maybe for a while move toward long-term bias, just kind of overcompensate the other way.
Yeah.
Right. So loss aversion, you know, just kind of overcompensate by taking, like, I think the 3-day rule is a good thing, like to take. So
that's a good point. I like that. I like that idea. Like taking the extreme opposite stance when you're starting to feel one of these biases creeping in, right? Okay, let's take the extreme opposite. I really want to play the lottery because literally the person in front of me at the convenience store yesterday was the one that bought the winning ticket. And so now it's like so present in my mind that I want to play so bad. Okay, but let's now put on the hat of the perpetual pessimist who's like, there's a 1 in 40 million chance that you're actually going to win. Put that money into a Roth IRA, right? Now we have both extremes, and then you can find your place in the middle.
Yeah. I mean, again, it comes down to know thyself. Because if the thing about a bias is if you don't know it, that's when it's really dangerous.
Yeah.
Because then you're falling into it all the time without even being aware of it. And so know thyself, know thyself, know thyself. I think that's the
message.
That's what you need to do. Cause these, like, that's what bias is all about, is you don't, you're like, you're leaning toward this thing. Like, again, Michael Scott, The Office, his whole thing was that he's like this not PC guy in a PC world. And he doesn't realize that he's offending the homosexual guy that's in the office, right? Oscar. He doesn't really, he's a good person, I think, but he doesn't know it. He doesn't really realize that that's his bias, and he's hurting this person that he says that he is his friend, and he doesn't realize it. And I think that's what a bias looks like. So, you know, again, there's another plug to go for on another show to go watch The Office, because it's a good example of behavioral bias, that Michael Scott is very biased towards sexism and racism and, you know, or basically he's not really racist, but just not PC stuff.
Sure.
And, you know, so he's not politically correct, but he's living in this political correct world. And, and that's where the humor comes from.
So that's the humor element.
Cause
that's
how stupid he is.
Right.
Cause you're laughing at him, at how dumb he is.
Exactly.
For not seeing how what he's saying is harmful.
Yeah.
And everybody else around him was like, ugh. Jeez, of course, you can't say that, Michael. You're not supposed to say that. And he's like, well, I could say it. I didn't mean it that way. Right. It's fine. Anyway, that's what bias looks like. So that's a good example of bias.
Example.
And the thing is that he's unaware. He's very unaware. That's so why it's dangerous.
Don't be unaware. Yeah. Don't be unaware. All right. I love it. All right, guys, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Jake of All Trades. Be sure to check us out on social media by searching for @Jake's2Cents and check out the blog at jakes2cents.com. Take care. We'll see you next time.
Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network, member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Fixed insurance products and services offered through CES Insurance Agency. Actual performance and results will vary. These interviews do not constitute a recommendation as to the suitability of any investment for any person or persons having circumstances similar to those portrayed. Consult a financial advisor regarding your specific circumstances.